everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tales from a Vet Tech with me, Tabitha Kucera. Today, I am talking about behavior, bringing behavior into your vet practice with badass, amazing VTS, RVTs in behavior, Kristen Kleba and Jessica Benoit. We're talking all about the benefits of having these services, examples of technician-driven behavior services in your practice, ways that we've implemented these into the practices we have worked, tips to learn more about behavior, and more. You don't want to miss this episode. Enjoy, you guys. I am so stoked today to have my behavior squad, amazing friends, Jessica and Kristen, to talk all about one of my favorite things. I'm biased. You guys know this. Behavior and bringing behavior services into the veterinary practice. So we all know that there's some challenges with this, but I don't think everyone realizes that there are a lot of benefits. And this is something, as me, Jess, and Kristen can share, something we've done very successfully in multiple practices. So to start, I figured we would just talk about the benefits of having behavior services in your practice. And of course, welcome my amazing guest, Kristen and Jessica. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
So of course, I can go on and on, but I'll have you start, Jess, with some of your favorite benefits of having behavior services in your practice, because Jess is actually a practice owner of a veterinary practice in Canada, and Kristen works in general practice offering quite a few amazing behavior services, and I'm a behavior consultant that goes to vet clinics, helps to implement behavior programs, or does the victory visit and leave. So again, we're all doing it, but in different ways, which is super fun. So what are some of your go-to benefits for having behavior service in your practice?
I think from day one, we always wanted to offer behavior in our practice. And it was more so because I found at that time, and this was, our practice has been open for 10 years now. And I found at that time, people just were like, were getting information about behavior from like their neighbor or the dog park, or, you know, the trainer down the street. And we know, unfortunately, because dog training is unregulated, that that's not always the safest way to gather that kind of information. And so I wanted people, once they come into their veterinary clinic, maybe they're there for an ear infection or something unrelated to behavior, that at least if we kind of get those questions in there regarding behavior, just general questions, that they start to realize this is something that we can help them with. And then when in doing so, you obviously have to train your staff and your team members up to be comfortable with behavior. But at least if you have that tech or that client services or that veterinarian that's in practice that can kind of give that information, has that knowledge, then you have clients that are more willing to come back to the practice. If they do see those behavior concerns down the road, even if they're not seeing them right away, they can also recognize body language changes if that's something that you're discussing in clinic with them. And let's say like you're just doing a regular consultation and you're saying, you know what, we're just going to give Fluffy a break because her ears are back and her tail is tucked. And you can go into that kind of body language and then let them know that if they're seeing these body language cues in other contexts, that that's possibly cause for concern and a reason that they should be coming back. And so you definitely see them buy into the practice and I think understand the importance of behavior, not just in the clinic, but also with their pet's day-to-day life.
For sure. And Kristen, what are some of your favorite benefits of having behavior services in?
And mine are really focusing on how do we try to prevent some of these things from getting worse. So for a little bit of my backstory was I worked in GP. I left to go work in a specialty clinic in a behavior specialty. And then I saw the need of how do we help these pets sooner? So for me, it was how do we get prevention sooner, get them kind of like what Jess was saying, get them understanding some of these concerns sooner before they become potentially full-blown problems that were like the last resort and we're having to do tons of medications and things, can we intervene and prevent things from worsening? Was partly it. The need for pets to come to the vet is a big problem. And I just kept seeing over and over again that as a technician, we were struggling to do the things with the animals, and we don't love that. It was stressful on us to get, you know, have to muzzle this one, get snapped at, this one's peeing everywhere. All of those things were happening, and we don't love that. The owners don't bring their pets in. They weren't getting the care they needed. And so trying to find a way to help those pets come in and be less stressed at the vet was my other big motivation and service that I really wanted to make sure was offered.
I think for general practice as well, I think we get a lot of technologists, and I'm going to say technologists in particular because I am a technologist and I support a lot of other technologists, that if we can support what they are interested in doing, and in this case, we're talking about behavior, you have a team member now that gets to do what they love in practice. So yes, you have technologists that want to do dentistry that's like maybe are more interested in anesthesia, all those sorts of things. But if we have one that is interested in behavior, at least we can give them a little bit of an extra job, hone those skills, better workplace balance.
They're essentially being empowered.
That's the word I'm looking for.
That's it's something I looked for a long time.
Right.
So thankfully I was very persistent. But I, you know, I was not empowered by a lot of the clinics I worked at. And I understand that behavior is not everyone's favorite thing. Behavior is medicine. So we can't just ignore it as a veterinary field. That's just a fact. But I understand that behavior is not everyone's favorite thing. Like you said, some people love dentistry. Some people love phlebotomy. And we really should empower those technicians by, hey, we can't send everyone to the Care and Prior Academy, realistically, nor does everyone probably want to do that next step. So how about we invest in our technician and send them to KPA, and then they're going to be their cheerleader and be able to educate the other staff. It's just so beneficial, not just for that staff member, and you're going to keep that staff member who is now well-educated. But again, like you said, you're empowering them, which I think is, we all have people, which I'm sure many people listening, you're the cat person like I was, or you're the behavior person like all of us were.
Right.
So empowering those, I mean, I know you've empowered a lot of technicians at your practice. And that actually brings up a good point. Jess has really worked to create, I don't want to say fear-free culture, but because it's even more than that, but a culture of appropriate care for not just the patients, but also for her staff members, and especially with a focus in behavior. And she's had people seek her clinic out because of what she's done with her clinic, like well-educated, skilled technicians purposely seeking out her practice because what she's done and the culture she's created, which I love so much.
Well, thank you. But yeah, it is. We do. I have three technologists right now that I mentor and work with on staff because we have a training program. So that's a little bit, as far as like the fear-free culture that Tabitha had mentioned, we absolutely have a fear-free culture. We're a fear-free certified practice. But in addition to that, there is a training program in place, and that training program has been in place since 2013 now. So we've been training, we've been doing training and preventative and behavior mod and all those sorts of things, cooperative care, for years and years. So it's a little bit different, I guess, than your regular general practice, but it does help, I think, long term. The other reason why I think it's so important that people are coming to their vet for behavior is, how many times do we see behavior that's medical? Like, how many times are people barking up the wrong tree? Like, they've seen a trainer for 6 months or no trainer, and it's not necessarily a behavior concern. It's a medical concern. And yes, they're kind of one and the same, but that, I think, is why it's so important that at least that's ruled out initially, and that isn't going to happen unless you're veterinary or a veterinary behavior.
Right. So obviously there's quite a few benefits of having behavior service in your practice. You're providing the best quality care and helping improving pets' lives and keeping that pet in the home, because let's be honest, there's research to support this, but also all three of us, which is probably how a big part to how we got into behavior as vet techs, behavior concerns results in many cases in euthanasia or relinquishment or other things that we don't want to see. And a lot of caregivers don't either, but they don't, like Jess said, the resources, like Susan Freeman says, there's a lot of cultural fog out there. And even if you meanwhile trying to find appropriate resources is difficult. And let's be honest, we are trusted. Veterinary professionals are trusted. I take my job very seriously as a behavior consultant as well. But when a caregiver has a concern, whether when it comes to all things animals, they trust their vet. So for example, we should not just be Googling trainers and giving them a list.
Very good point. I was just gonna say that. I was like,
but again, I'm sure that's something I've done a long, long time ago, right, guys. And right. Now it hurts my heart, but we need to really, even if you aren't the behavior professional, we have to realize the power and weight that our recommendations have, which is a beautiful thing. But also it can be challenging if you're maybe, for example, Googling trainers, which is actually really, really dangerous. And I would even say a legal issue, but that's just me. Because I think it's really dangerous because I see things happen to animals. But anyways, so of course, it improves pet welfare, saves pets' lives. It helps empower and enhance veterinary technicians and CSRs and veterinarians' career, because if they really like that, we should empower them. And then, of course, it helps to maintain that human-animal bond, but also that client-hospital bond, which helps to increase financial revenue. Because we have increased pet retention, you're getting client referrals, increase in vet visits, decrease in required staff assistance, because, for example, they worked with Kristen on cooperative care. Because Kristen has started an amazing cooperative care for prevention, but also where there's needs to be a skilled technician, usually with credentials of training, because a happy visit most technicians can do, but a victory visit or cooperative care with previous fear, anxiety, and stress or trauma, that's where classical counter conditioning and more advanced behavior modification needs to be done. And Kristen's vet clinic is very lucky to have her. And I would love to hear, because I know you're doing a lot of other things, but that's something that you were really focused on. And you've had so much success in implementing this victory visit / happy visit / cooperative care in your hospital. So can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, I saw the need for pets that were struggling, and I really wanted to try to figure out how do we help that. So my administrator of my hospital is great. I went with her with the idea, and she is like what we talked about. She's very much, if you have a passion, let's figure out how to follow your passion and how do I support you in following that passion. So I said, this is what I want to do. This is what I think it can look like. We started off slow, where I was doing, you know, a couple visits a week, maybe in the beginning. Still, I was working regular kind of techie shifts and then doing the other stuff. And getting things started, but it definitely took off much quicker than I think I even expected, that clients were very, very open and kind of ready for that next step, right? These were clients that had been, you know, trying to get their dog's blood drawn, and they've thrown multiple different medications and dosages at the dog and kept repeated trying, and the dog still was struggling and just fighting through those meds and still unable to have the procedure done. And that's very obviously frustrating for everybody, right? The client, the staff, the dog is having bad experiences. So things were just getting worse. So with the program that I set up, we started seeing them kind of weekly, every other week, and working on that behavior modification plan to teach them, you know, their consent cue or start button cue, and slowly work through those things. And it has really changed, I think, not even just the clients and the pets' perception of things, but even the trickle down to my other staff. Like I think at first thought I was nuts, what I was doing. And now that they've seen it, they're like, oh yeah, you got to go see Kristen. You got to go do this. This is the next step. Even before we start throwing all those meds at it, which I think is the goal, right? That medication isn't always the answer, but we do need to teach these pets that, hey, coming in here isn't the worst thing in the world. And you do get a say in what happens to you. And we can help them, set them up to succeed for years to come. Cause that's my biggest issue, is a lot of these pets are 2-3 years old, and they got 10 plus years to go of needing vet care. And I don't want them to struggle for all of that time. So it's been really kind of awesome to see how many people really were open for it, because I'm not going to lie, my area up here in Michigan is still quite inundated with a lot of older school trainers. There's still a big struggle with a lot of punishment and things being used. So I wasn't sure how many people were going to be open and ready for this kind of different way of thinking, right? So yeah, I think it really was the support from kind of my administrator and then my staff, and just, I think, having them see what difference can be made, and then kind of trickled from there. I was planning on doing other services,
right,
as well.
I remember you telling me but you're like, whoa, this blew up really quick. So yeah. I'm going to focus on this right now.
Yeah, I was planning, I had all the other services I was planning on bringing in, and we had already been doing, puppy. We have a training department at our facility as well. So they were already doing kind of, other type services, puppy preschool, and has some training classes, clicker training and things like that. So I really wasn't focusing on that, but I was like, oh, I can do some other, behavior modification sessions and things like that. But honestly, my time just got blown up with just all of the dogs struggling with vet visits, which is just an insane number of dogs that struggle. And I've even have, now clients coming to us because of who we are as a clinic, and the way that we treat the pets is, even in general, the way that we treat pets is different, I think, than a lot of other vet clinics, with, getting them a good pre-visit medication plan if we need to, going slow, not pushing them. So we have clients that now come from a ways away to us, either A, for my services, or just us in general, and just the reputation now that we have as a vet who cares that your pet is not, manhandled and held down to get a blood draw. So.
And we're not going to just say we can't do this, but we're going to come up with plan A, plan B, right, plan C, yeah, for that individual client and patient. And I love what you mentioned, because I think we've all been through this. I remember when I had my first kitten kindergarten class, I cried, y'all, because no one came and it wasn't signed up for a lot. And I understand that that could be really discouraging, but now my kitten kindergarten classes fill up. If I have a cooperative care thing, it fills up. So like Kristen said, even if you feel like other people don't care, because I think we all get a little, especially in some environments that we've all been in, like no one cares about gentle control, but no matter what, you matter and you can make a difference in every interaction you have with an animal. And I had so many, especially cat behavior professionals, reach out to me and say, no one cares, no one will do it. And I was like, if we aren't offering it, no one, you're right. So I understand it's challenging, but sometimes we're pleasantly surprised and we have to start somewhere. So as corny as that sounds, you're not alone. And these are services people really, really want, especially after I lecture. The first thing the general public asks me is, where do I work? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure Jess and Kristen have those same feelings, because there's a lot of research to support the way people feel about their pets is very different than 20 years ago. And just the way they perceive them, again, we perceive them this way the whole time, but addressing the emotional well-being of their pet is becoming a need now, which is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But they're seeking out people like Jess's practice and Kristen's practice, or I have a list of referring vets that I recommend, and I'm asked about it all the time. So again, I think, and how you started slow, you're like, hey, manager or head vet, because that's how I did it when I worked in GP. I was like, this is my plan. I laid it out. I talked about the benefits. I found the motivation of that practice owner, which in this case was financial and new clients. So I use that motivation to my benefit, find what's motivating for the learner. And I started off small and then it becomes bigger. And I love, Kristen's been doing an awesome job, because she didn't start this way, but because advertising, I hate it, guys, but marketing is part of our job. So she's done some beautiful videos of, hey, here's an example of this pet from A to C. And again, learning through showing is a big deal. Cause I think even when we're talking about gentle control or compassionate handling, when we're lecturing, people may not believe us, but then I share 20 videos of, hey, I did this in a closet at a shelter. Hey, I did this at a low cost vaccine clinic with 5 minutes. Or I did this in GP. I think people really start to see. So I just want to give you props, Kristen, because I've been noticing your adorable marketing videos and I love them so much.
Yeah, it's very nerve-wracking making videos. I'm not going to lie, guys. It's out of my comfort zone to do those kind of things and to put myself out there, and really, I'm not big on promoting myself because it's
weird,
it's a
guys.
Weird thing to do, right? But I think that there is something to say. The hard part for me, I think too, in the beginning, it is kind of explaining it to people. I had one client I remember that, like, the first time I vaccinated her dog, and this is a dog that had to be like, he was like hogtied to the wall to sedate him. He was thrashing. The first time I vaccinated him with his chin rest, the owner was like, afterwards, she was like, oh my God, I remember back when we started this like a year ago that you told me this was going to happen. And she's like, I thought you were nuts. And I was like, I very well could have been, but it does work.
Thanks for being on this journey with me.
She bought into the journey. She understood where we were going. She had the patience. And I think that's part of it too, is the right clients are going to give you what you need, right? The patience and the time to do it and things like that. But it's been a weird journey, but I do think one of the big things is picking small little ways to start. Don't bite off more than you can chew in the beginning, because I think trying to do too much all at once or trying to go all in, 100% in, is you're going to potentially flounder a little bit more. Where if you kind of break it down like we do in training into little achievable steps and you do those, it does all kind of start to fall into place, and then you can do a little bit more and a little bit more. And showing everybody else that like what you're doing does then help them to help you do more. So
I love it. And then I know, just because puppy and kitten socialization classes are a huge thing, that because victory visits, working with fear aggression, that's a little more advanced as far as behavior modification. And that's something that I would not recommend for a beginner, of course, but we all have to start somewhere. And kitten and puppy socialization classes are so important. So, and this is something I would love to see. Thankfully, I see more puppy classes. I would love to see more kitten socialization. Mm-hmm. It still blows my mind a little bit in 2022 how rare they are. I'm a human and I struggle with stuff, guys. But I focus on the positive. It's getting better. And I know that Kristen's clinic offers those, but I know, Jess, you've been offering the puppy and kitten classes as well as just general training. I mean, you do a lot at your practice. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the behavior services you offer?
Yeah. So we've been offering, so I'll tell you how I started, because when I started doing this, it wasn't really a thing. Like, it was actually very difficult. I knew I wanted a VTS. I knew I needed training certifications. I knew all those things when I graduated tech school in 2010, so 12 years ago. I knew that's what I wanted to do. But it was a matter of trying to figure out how to do it and get the hours I needed in a general practice. There is a benefit, obviously, for me, because I do own the practice. So I kind of made up my own rules. But
woohoo!
Yeah, I did make up my own rules. But I think when I'm talking to other technologists that email me, and I get a lot of emails that are like, I want to do behavior. How do I do behavior? I think the first thing I do recommend, other than like a lot of continuing education and a lot of reading, is try and find training certification. Because I found it like unethical for myself to be training without a certification. And so as soon as I could get one, I got one. And honestly, 12 years ago, it was a little different. I've got a few now.
Because we're always learning and growing.
We are. And so, yes, I started with kind of a more baseline certification that I probably wouldn't recommend anymore, but that's besides the point. So that's kind of where I think people need to start. Like, I want you to have a very base understanding of learning theory, prevention, ensuring that if you are going to run these classes, that everybody is going to be safe. And they're going to be run in a positive manner. And so we started with I call it puppy socialization exploration. That's the class for my younger guys. That was the first class we ever ran out of our practice. And then what started happening is all those puppies were graduating around 16 weeks of age. And my clients were saying, but now what?
And you want to learn more.
I was like, oh no. And at that point I did have some trainers that I recommended and still do, that were ethical humane-based trainers. And so I would be like, well, go here for this class, because I wasn't ready to add more to my plate at that point. And I did this very strategically. And then once that class started running, we ran Puppy Foundations. We made a curriculum for Puppy Foundations, which is for my older pups. I did run kitten socialization classes for a time. They are not running right now, and I understand the need for them. But yeah, it was something that we did in clinic as well. And then we started going into private preventative training. So your kitten and your puppies that need prevention. Then when I was comfortable with that, we went into kind of behavior modification. Kind of throughout all of that, I always ran client seminars out of my practice. I found that it was lovely for people to kind of come in and learn about feline. It doesn't have to be difficult. I love client seminars. They can be like 45 minutes to an hour long, and just pick a specific topic, body language, for example, veterinary visits, things like that, trick training, enrichment. Like, these are all just our training just generally, and what that can look like and what positive reinforcement is. All those sorts of things are important, I think, for clients to really understand. And so that has been something that we used to do after hours a lot for clients, and then virtually over COVID and that sort of thing. And then actually more recently, and mostly in the last 5 years, I guess I'll say, is there was a spike in cooperative veterinary care.
We're so excited about this.
Yeah, we are. And so
vets who have behavior credentials, you guys can guess why we love cooperative care, because we've experienced a lot of
We love it.
I think there's a special place in every vet tech who is interested in behavior's heart for cooperative care. And me, Jess, and Kristen definitely are in that group for sure.
And I think we're good at it.
Yeah.
Not just the three of us, but I think understanding the intricacies of a veterinary exam or a veterinary procedure, as well as the medical aspect of cooperative veterinary care, and gives us an advantage, I think, to a degree for some of the cooperative care some patients have. So yeah, if you are a vet tech and you want to do this, you're desperate to do it in practice, that's kind of the order that I did things, and I recommend things are done. Everyone can, like, if you have a specific niche and you want to start there, absolutely. But I think prevention is where you need to start. You need to get very good at understanding what normal looks like before you can help with, I don't even like the word abnormal, but just like individual needs, but that just are maybe maladaptive, I guess, is probably like behavior concern, behavior disorder. And that's different than prevention, but you need to get better. You need to get very good at prevention, I think, first, in my opinion. Right. And then you're going to know when you're above water or when you're above your head and you need to refer. And that's also something important as well.
No, I definitely agree with needing a training, getting some training background for sure, I think is a really great place to start, because
can you share, Kristen? Because I don't know off the top of my head, your path to, because Jess did a beautiful job of describing how she got, and I'll share, because again, I think all of ours are a little different, but when it came to you being like, I love behavior, and because all three of us are from general practice,
right?
Where did you start exactly?
So mine all started with, I think we all have this similar story at times, with a little wiry haired Jack Russell who had all kinds of problems. And I did everything wrong. So my clinic previously, we did the training now that I would tell everybody to go away from, right? You know, that was what, trying to think back year wise, it was a ways back. My boss was open enough when I started seeing the changes with my dog, and then I started seeing the behaviors with her, and I started being like, oh my God, I'm doing everything wrong. How do people not know about the right way to do things? So I started to go down the path of reading and getting more information. And then I went to CABC. My boss let us go, me and a couple of the trainers and one of our veterinarians who does behavior services with our clinic now as well. We all went and learned a lot. And then we came back. She was willing to put us all through KPA. So that was my next step, was we all went through that grueling 6 months for that training certification, and really learned a lot with that, following that is shortly after that was when I got the opportunity to go work for a veterinary behaviorist. So I shifted gears. And before that, I was doing some, you know, puppy classes, things like that at my clinic. I wasn't doing the behavior modification stuff I'm doing now. I started with the, you know, basic obedience classes and puppy preschool and training, you know, basic obedience type things. And then spent 5 years in the specialty practice, getting my VTS and really learning a lot about behavior modification and how do we help these dogs that are really struggling. And then that's when I shifted gears after I passed my VTS exam in 2020, came back to my clinic. So I was at the same clinic, left, came back. And that's where things kind of took off with me starting those additional services. And
I think love it too, just like for techs that are probably listening and are like, well, what I can't afford, I'm going to say I can't afford.
It's PT, expensive.
For example, sure. It is like, for example, pricey. It's something you need to kind of like save for. I think there are courses like for two of my technologists right now, because KPA is a goal. It's just not somewhere they can get to right this second. I said, like, here's a list of really good podcasts. Here's a list of really good webinars. Here's a list of books I need you to read. And I can list some of that stuff. But like, I think Behavior Vets has really awesome webinars, for example. And I do recommend Dr. Susan Friedman's Living and Learning with Animals course. I recommend, if they can't go straight into KPA, do the KPA Foundations course.
Yeah, it's a wonderful beginner.
Right.
For sure.
And so it's just like, get your fear-free certification. Do all the little things that you can do that are maybe more affordable first before like jumping in to KPA. Cause it's just like for Canadians too, like, right.
We're
looking
more,
at, yeah. We're looking and at even US into, dollars. So.
Yeah. Even jumping into, cause I have a lot of technicians and shelter animal welfare workers who reach out and say, I want to do behavior. I want to do what you do, or I want to be a VTS. And, I think wanting to be a VTS is amazing, but also maybe just starting a little smaller. I love the dedication because I'm that person. Like, you guys know,
yeah.
I go all in. I started trail running and I'm training for 100K and it's only been a year. I'm that weird person.
Yeah, you don't
and
half-ass I know there's, anything.
Yeah. There's a lot of us in vet med who are like that.
Yeah.
So I think when it comes, and I love the excitement because I still am that person. So I think what Kristen and Jess are saying is really great advice. Like, start with just reading. Like, I have a book of a list of book recommendations. I have podcasts. The cool thing is there are a lot more resources than that there were that when we all three started. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many more resources that are easily accessible and free or very low cost to learn more, which when I first started, which is part of the reason I got. So mine's a little different. I worked in general practice. I found the amazing Dr. Sophia Yin and I saw her speak and I was like, I'm just going to
meet you.
You pick your lectures ahead of time. And I'm like, I'm going to go to hers in the morning and then go to, I saw her speak and I was like, I'm here all day. And I was like, I love behavior now. That's
I did that too. And then I saw Debbie Martin and
Debbie
Julie
Martin.
Shaw at the same conference. And I literally just like, I think I stalked Debbie for the majority of my
career. We love you, Debbie. Yeah, we're not weird. She knows this.
For the majority of my career. But I was like, I want to be Debbie Martin when I grow up and Sophia Yin. And like, it was just, it's the same thing. Like, you go to a conference. And so if you can go to behavior conferences, go to them and just.
And you find your even conferences in general, even if you're not into behavior, I think.
Yeah.
Conferences are so, I understand a lot of us are burnt out and tired and the idea of going to learn does not sound fun. Well, to me, it's super fun, but I understand that mentality. But then when you go to a conference, you find, first off, you find people who are similar to you, who have the same struggles. You get re-inspired and you find your niche. I had a friend I took to a veterinary conference. She hasn't been to one in a while. And Dr. Mary Gardner, because I love end of life hospice stuff and she's amazing. She had a euthanasia track and my friend went to it and she was like, oh my, this is amazing. And she started like this beautiful euthanasia like program at my clinic where we offered more resources to people who were grieving. It was just beautiful. So I think even if behavior is not your thing, going to conferences, is so, even if it's just because I now I'm a speaker, so thankfully I get to go to a lot more, but I went to one a year when I was working in GP for multiple reasons, cost, getting the time off work. That's a whole nother thing, all of that stuff. So I think starting with some of the small things that Justin, Kristen, and then you might find, because for example, I work with dogs a lot, but I'm very well known for the work I do with cats. Mm-hmm. And I started because I saw Dr. Sophia Yin speak and I was like, oh shit, there are ways for me to handle animals that, because again, like Kristen says, it causes us all stress and compassion fatigue and burnout. And sometimes we're not given I wasn't taught other ways in tech school. I was taught two techniques that I don't utilize anymore when it comes to handling cats and dogs. So I didn't know what else to do. My brain like exploded because I was like, I can do better just from a caregiving standpoint, not even a behavior standpoint, just handling and interacting with the patients I work with. And then I started seeing a lot of behavior concerns in cats. And unfortunately, cats don't come to the vet a lot, which hurts my heart. And that's a whole separate problem in vet med. Like cats are the most popular pets, yet every year we see them less and less and less. So usually when I would see them, in many cases, I would be first meeting this client and this cat. And the most humane thing to do was to euthanize this cat. Because by the time the client recognized that cat was suffering, they were suffering for a very long time due to a variety of reasons. Not that client isn't a good caregiver. And it hurt my heart to see this, to see the caregiver's sadness. And obviously it was hard for me. So I was like, why does this? Because we like to ask why is this happening? So then I started doing a little more research on cat behavior. And this was back before I knew a quarter of what I know now. And I was like, oh shit, no wonder so many cats are getting relinquished. So many cats are being euthanized. So many cats, clients are just opening up the door. Cause how many of our cats have came to us? Like they're not even contacting a shelter or a vet. Cause I was like, I'm a vet tech and I have more access to resources than other people. And I couldn't find shit. the resources I could find even back then I knew were outdated and not necessarily the best. And these were veterinarian resources. So I was like, okay, I was already into decreasing stress for all the cats and dogs I work with, like setting up the environment, handling all of that. That's how it started. Got into cat behavior, went on another level with CE and education. And then I started getting into dog behavior as well. And then I was the tech. I started with somewhat preventative services, but more reactive services, which is not the goal. But like a caregiver would come in with their cat house soiling. I would be the tech to get the history because I knew what questions to answer. I could provide some of those basic that we consider basic now, like an appropriate litter box setup. And, or if a client wanted to declaw their cat, I could have a conversation with them, meet them where they're at. If there is destructive scratching, help them address that in a way, you know, that's kind of how I started. And I would just get hey, Tabitha, go into this room to talk. Or this client can't give their dog ear meds. This client can't give their cats the pill. Tabitha, can you talk to them for 5 minutes? So I got really good at doing things quickly, now I'm like, this is an amazing skill. But at the time, I much rather have an hour with every person. Now I could do a Facebook Live and answer a question in 3 minutes. And that's a whole separate skill that I've gotten better at. But that's kind of how I started. And then I was like, hey, I want to let's get some structure because you understand vet clinic, how important this is, because I'm getting thrown into rooms every 5 seconds. And that's kind of how I was like, can we get some victory visits, some happy visits, some structure, some preventative services, some SOPs, y'all, on handling? Which Jess knows all about. She's a beautiful, like her clinic is amazing and has SOPs. I love you. They have SOPs
for everything.
They have SOPs on everything. But I mean, that's a whole nother thing. It's bizarre to me how many shelters and veterinary clinics do not have SOPs on handling. It just blows.
I think because my mind. Because I don't think everybody can agree on it.
Well, yeah, maybe.
I think that's part of the issue is like the boss wants to do it one way. The other boss wants to do it the other way. The practice manager wants to do it another way. That tech that's been here for 20 years.
And I think a lot of people can't explain.
Right.
Like, yes. I think that's the biggest thing. People like we all teach, you know, I teach handling and I can explain. Right. I want your elbow here. This is
exactly.
But to what I don't think people even know, to be fair, understandably, this is from an empathetic standpoint. what is the criteria for handling? You hold the animal and then hold them tighter when they move. That's what we were taught. I was taught in tech school. So I think that's another, but that's again, that's where I started writing SOPs for my practice.
Right. And that's honestly,
I nerded out on another level.
It's such a good, but it's a good, like if you can explain it, if you can write it down, you can start teaching it. And I think it's very stressful for a new tech going into an exam and being in charge of kind of discussing behavior without like a ton of background maybe or experience speaking. And so that's where like in our practice, starting with like going through the puppy and kitten packs can be helpful, because you also have the prompts of like we have like actual like physical puppy and kitten packs. And so there's handouts. And so there's those prompts to be like, this is what we're going to talk about now. This is what we're going to talk, like house training, crate training, enrichment, like house kitten friendly setups and homes and stuff like that. And then once they get comfortable having those discussions, moving on to kind of what you got put into, which was like, how do we do ear meds? How do we do carrier training? How are we doing things that are maybe more intervention based in an exam room? And those conversations, I always ask techs that I work with, that I mentor, to write me handouts. Like I write a lot of handouts, but just
you guys, that's another good thing.
So helpful. It is, but it's helpful because if you can write it out, you can 100%. Teach it. You can teach it. And so write it out, explain it. I still do it. I wish somebody would videotape me because I look at, I talk to myself. Like if I have a presentation, I'll like present it to myself.
Oh, I've done that plenty of times.
Where I'm just like trying to get my language, going. Mm-hmm. And I talk a lot with my hands when I do speak. As you could, I'm doing it right now. You guys can't see it.
You guys, we talk with our hands. You don't get to see the beauty of our hands all over the place.
The theatrics going on right now. but it's good practice. Or have one of your other, like your veterinarians or your other team members on staff just say, can you sit down while I practice this with you? And then I think it's helpful. Yeah. Just rather
plus,
than being
probably,
just kind of like
probably learn
thrown
something in that too. If you're presenting something on behavior to them, they're going to learn. I mean, I've done staff seminars about body language and handling, and it's always a learning process, right? Everybody starts at a certain level and you have new people coming in that you need to help mold into a lower stress kind of handling way. And I think talking about it and having them listen about it is only going to
I have a presentation that all new staff sit through on just like, this is how we do things. That's actually what it's called. It's called, this is how we do things.
I love that.
It's just, it does set them up for success, because I think there's some stress coming into a fear-free practice without a fear-free background.
Right.
And being like,
and a lot of us are still being taught like real talk.
Oh yeah, like, I know. In school,
lot of us aren't really, I mean, handling isn't even really addressed much in tech school. And also like in tech school, I wasn't told about VTS, which hurts my heart. I wasn't told about VTSs and all the amazing sick ass things that technicians can do.
Yeah, me neither. I didn't know. They know now though. Like I've been speaking at the tech schools probably for 5 or 6 years.
So and that's another thing that you can do. Now. Find your local tech school once you're more experienced. Because that's how I started. I started doing general public lectures because I was like, I only have 15 minutes with this client. And this is just my experience. And the vet would not allow me. I don't know how else to word this. They would not allow me to talk to the client about medication administration. And I knew for a fact that that client would not give that cat that med. And if that cat can't get that med, guys, come on. Blech. So I was like, okay, I'm a problem solver. This is where I'm at. I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to have a lecture. Y'all, for real. This is what I did a long time ago. I'm going to have a lecture at the library or a webinar for 30 minutes about whoever can come. I'm going to tell the clients about it and whoever can come. And it's going to be about medication tips. That's how I started speaking.
Yeah, but it's great.
So that's another way. I mean, again, education is a big, we all know as technicians, that's a huge part of our job. And a lot of this stuff, although all three of us deal with pretty severe behavior issues now, prevention is huge and something that even if behavior is not your favorite thing, we should be doing in vet med. Like asking the correct question. Like, for example, when we're getting a history, you know, I always ask open-ended questions, like those basics that we learn about. And I don't say, does your cat use the litter box? Because that I say, has your cat ever had an accident? Or what does your cat's litter box habits look like? Right. Like, I kind of make it more open. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many clients whose cats and or dogs were house soiling for years and it never came up in the appointment. So that client was suffering. And so was that animal, y'all.
Yeah.
And that was just a simple history taking question.
Yeah.
Behavior intake
questions. They should be on every single file.
I feel like we need a bunch of like, you guys, we need this and this and like stickers and
it's
shirts.
It's one of the things though. It is like, but if you do not ask, you will never know.
I think some clients are just afraid to kind of voice it. I don't know.
Or they're embarrassed. They're
unsure how to bring it up, or they don't know kind of what if they're going to get judged, which I feel like we shouldn't be judging people with the issues they're having, right? If you have a problem, let's help you fix it. But there's always, even with my clients sometimes now, I feel like I have to like try to drag things out of them. And I had a client somewhat recently that I didn't even know how bad she was struggling because when I was with her, things were going well during our visits and things were okay. And then it kind of all came to a head and I was like, whoa, like I was not aware this was so bad. Like, I'm really sorry. Like, let's talk about it now and things. But it was one of those things where I was like, what could I have done differently to have her feel more comfortable opening up to me about, you know, how bad things were. And that dog ended up being euthanized for its behavior. And it went very quickly from, I didn't realize how bad it was at that point for her and how much she was struggling. And that's another area where I focus a lot on, because my personal experience is that I did have euthanized a dog for her behavior problem. So that's a big passion of mine, is helping people down that road if that's where we end up going. But it's hard to have them bring those kind of things up, and hopefully we're not getting to that place a lot, but even
those things do happen.
Like,
and I think
things, yeah,
a big part of our job is supporting and coaching and behavior, you know, like, unfortunately I'm not upset about it, but now that I own my own consulting business, a lot of the presenting concerns are pretty severe. And I thank those clients for reaching out. I reinforce them immediately. But again, I would love to see more preventative services.
Yeah. I think what happens, because I see a plethora, I see the majority of cases I see are cooperative veterinary care cases at this point, similar to Kristen. But it's interesting because a lot of those dogs, and even some of the cats, they don't just have issues with cooperative veterinary care. And that's what
that
happens.
Helps to start a conversation.
Those dogs and cats do not, they are rarely comfortable with unfamiliar people just in their general day-to-day life. And so, yes, they're coming in to see us specific for consent training and behavior modification, but we are dealing with an animal that is not comfortable being handled in a lot of other contexts. Mm-hmm. And that is so stressful for clients, I think, and for the animals as well. But it's really interesting because you end up trying to help with one thing, but those dogs and cats they're just not comfortable with in touch.
Yeah,
I definitely agree. They always have something else going on usually. And whether it comes
there
up right
is.
Away or like, as you're working with the dog, they start to get more comfortable with me. And then they start to, well, I have this question about this, or I'm doing this. And you're like, oh, well, let's talk about that while we're taking a little break from training for a second and get them either, whether I need to kind of go further with that, or I refer them to where they need to go, or whether it's medications or more different training or something, right? Give them the
and I do it separate. It's an interesting, because it actually has come up quite a bit, because because I mostly just do cooperative care right now, because I love it. And that's where I'm at in my life. That those, when it comes into like, this is not the only concern, it has to be like a completely different cause. Like,
that's,
it's
probably
not
a better way to do it, honestly. Cause sometimes
I've done it.
And then I'm like, shoot. Yeah.
And that's absolutely important. Like, I'm always like, this is absolutely important to address. Let's do this and an in-home consult separate from these sessions, although it is all related and all impacting this behavior that we're working with right now.
See, I want to be like Jess when I grow up. That's who I want to be.
So. We all want to be like each other when we grow up. Because that's how friends work. We all met through the love and trauma of obtaining a VTS. I mean, I said love and.
Yeah.
And now I have a bond with these girls. I fucking love them so much. I'm going to get emotional. Anyways, another thing too, like we're talking about all these services, something I started offering in my business that I think this is something that we could definitely be doing in vet med is like, I have a Friends for Life senior pet care package.
Yes.
And it's just like a one-time consult. But again, these are things that could easily be done in a visit. And I would love to see more of this happening, but I basically just talk about how to increase and maintain cognitive function enrichment. Like how to, I talk about exploring new ways to train your pet because, for example, their sight might not be as good. So we may not be using visual cues, and we talk about teaching other different types of cues and what cognitive dysfunction is and how to seniorify your house. And these are all things that I don't understand why it's not happening more, because it's seniorifying your house. Like, hey, get rugs or provide, move, see here, where your cats love to rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's, make sure they have
well-lit areas, steps,
low entrance litter boxes. Like these are things that, and obviously I love all things behavior, but as I've gotten more into it, I've realized, and I think this is true with humans as well, senior care is not touched on as much. And a lot of clients, like, I love Dr. Mary Gardner, but a lot of clients, similar to behavior, when it comes to their pets aging, they have so many concerns. They feel isolated, and they think the only time to contact the vet is when it's so bad that the animal's quality of life isn't great, and to euthanize, which again, we are there for them at that point, but we could help you and your pet's life be better in between. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's another behavior service that I just started offering that like a few years ago. And I was like, I wish I did more of this in GP. But again, we, like Kristen said, we all are learning as we go when it comes to everything. So
adolescence is another one too, where there should be adolescent wellness exams.
Facts.
But like the senior exams, the adolescent wellness exams, those are all things that can be done in practice. Those, they should be kind of booked like 30-minute appointments with the technologist. Like that's, it's an awesome thing for the technologist to do. It's revenue for the practice. It's helpful for the client and the pet. Like,
and it helps to catch and manage and prevent behavior and medical issues, which saves money in the long run. Again, we could sell it in any way.
Yeah.
I need the client or the owner to hear.
I will say, I
hate to say that, but
I tried to, that was one of the services when I first came back that I really wanted to offer was adolescent wellness visits. And I'm not going to lie, guys, like that, I had this vision of what it looked like, and maybe I still need to tweak that some more because it ended up not being as preventative as I was hoping. It was the doctors throwing the dogs at me that were, you know, 12 months old that were already really struggling and probably needed to see, you know, a veterinarian for some, you know, anti-anxiety medications, or they were having major problems, which I think is still a good thing to do. But also like my goal was like, hey, how do I kind of get myself in again, preventative? How do I get myself in there sooner? So if anybody figures out how to do that, in let me know.
I wonder. So I've got an idea.
All right.
If when they come in for their last puppy visit, that it would be booked in like a 2 to 3 month time frame. Mm-hmm. And then you're maybe more likely to catch it prior to like 10 to 12 months of age. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and maybe there's like some sort of benefit or package to doing that. You get like 20% off the, you know, something like that. Or you get like an enrichment toy or something for like booking.
And there's a lot of different ways to market. Like when I did Victory Visits, even when I did, cause Happy Visits we didn't charge, Victory Visits we did. And I had what is those cards? Like a card that you like punch
cards.
Punch card. Yeah.
I had guys, I'm so smart. They got there. Punch card guys. I had a punch card. So again, there's a lot of fun because also like all three of us, kindergarten is something people are starting to understand it, cooperative care, but I'm very skilled. I have tons of credentials. I'm really good with people, but I still need to market it well. So that's a whole separate, we'll probably have a podcast again. Oh, we'll have to come back and just talk about marketing behavior services because I think sometimes people like are just like, because what I hear, and to be fair, I've been this person, so I'm not judging, but also it's, you'll say, I did it. No one fucking cared. I'm discouraged and upset. But then now that I've been doing this for a while, and you guys know, I put myself out there quite a lot, I've learned over time and from my colleagues and my friends, like, oh, this is a really good marketing technique. Like, again, I love what Kristen's doing with the cooperative care because I follow her because she's amazing. And I'm seeing all her beautiful and I'm getting ideas from it. Because I've seen stuff Jess is doing and I'm like, oh, that's really, and I'll text her and be like, can I just do this too?
Yeah. True story.
We talk. True we don't story. Steal stuff. That's yeah, a whole
no,
separate.
No, no. That's a whole
We're
nother.
Not getting in. That's a different whole podcast. Thing.
That's a different podcast. On taking
but I think having
stuff.
having you know, friends or, you know, colleagues
a support group
that you can go to. Yeah. Because it's been playing out on a Jess and been like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know what the heck I'm doing, apparently, because this isn't going right. Am I missing something? And, you know, so then she gives me some ideas, maybe, or like, yeah, maybe try this. Or, you know, there's been playing out, like, bouncing off of everybody about, I don't know why I'm struggling with this one pet so hard. Like, what am I missing? So I think it's good to have that support group to know you're not alone, that sometimes things don't go 100% the way you want them to go. And there are going to be ups and downs, but that we're all in the same boat and maybe they have an idea. This has worked for them in the past. So try this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. So you guys gave a bunch of amazing tips already. So I know this is hard. But if you had to list one of your favorite behavior resources, what would it be?
Monique's and Alicia's Cooperative Veterinary Care Textbook.
Second.
I also that. Agree with that as well.
Yeah. It just that I don't even have to hesitate. It's like
she knows, she know they know we love them and that book is fucking amazing.
It is like, amazing.
It's just, and like it's there's so like, easy to read.
And there's videos. There's like 100 behavior. Videos.
Yeah, and the videos are helpful. It is a very well put together resource, that is for sure.
And Debbie and Julie's.
Obviously the clinical textbook for veterinary behavior technicians and nurses.
What is it called?
That is
it's called Canine and Feline Behavior for Veterinary Technicians and Nurses. I think
it's on my desk.
Yeah, it's on mine too, but I gotta go get it. But I think that's what it's called, right? Like, I don't want to give the wrong title.
No,
yeah.
you're right.
Yeah, like that's written. But I would say, like, honestly, these behavior vets with their webinars, like, I'm very much into what I'm seeing. Because
I've watched a few of those too. They are
free,
very good.
Yeah. They have free ones, which is lovely. And then they have, like, obviously ones that you pay for. Some are a little bit more involved, I guess, than others, like a little more
intense.
Advanced and clinical. Yeah. Advanced, yeah. Clinical where I'm like, this might not be practical for everybody and that's okay.
But they have, like, I think they've got a lot of really great, they're coming out with a lot of really great resources, in my opinion.
How about you, Kristen? I know you like, we all love all of these together, but
I feel like I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can add to that list, but I don't really have any. Those have been my recommendations too, for sure.
I am a huge fan of, obviously I love Fear Free, but one of the reasons I like Fear Free is because they have probably more webinars than you guys can imagine.
Yeah.
Cause
my gosh, it's insane.
They have so many and they're from amazing. So these aren't just like, not that I'm throwing shade at bloggers, but yes, I am a little, these are, I guess I am a little, but these are the thing I love about it is a lot of their resources are from experienced, skilled, science-based, humane-based people. It's up to date information. And for example, some of my favorite resources from Fear Free is their pain ones, because Dr. Ralph and Tamara Grubb and these people that Robin Downing, these people that I like bow down to, because pain is one of my, because in behavior, quite a few of our patients are actually suffering from chronic or acute pain that's causing or contributing to the behavior concern. But again, there's Monique has a nail trim one. There's just more than you guys can imagine.
Yeah, I agree.
So I think that again, very accessible, very affordable. Cause that's, we understand that everyone can't, we all are like, we're big fans of Karen Pryor Academy, but they have like Clicker Expo is a wonderful conference, but also it's very expensive.
Yeah. CABC is a good conference.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well. Clinical Animal Behavior Conference. That one is one every year. Oh my gosh. So many. I love VMX as a conference just because it is in Florida. Sorry guys. But
what is what's the conference in Ohio, that one that you guys have there? They always have a ton.
Midwest.
Yeah, Midwest has a ton of behavior stuff too, for sure.
Dude. Yeah. Midwest. Yeah. If people are like, cause I tell trainers,
it's
like
pretty cost. It's not very expensive either.
Like,
yeah. For what
trainers,
you get. Yeah.
I'm not throwing shade, but like, trainers, don't go to that behavior conference that has one track for $700.
Right.
Go to VMX or Midwest. I don't think they realize, like, hey, trainers and behavior consultants who aren't from the vet world, you are welcome in those spaces. And that's how I mean, I think that's a big part to how I've gotten so skilled. I think I was being taught by like Sophia Yin and these other amazing veterinary mm-hmm. behaviorists and behavior VT, like Monique and all of these amazing people that are now my friends, but are people I like Debbie Martin. And that's how I started. And that was like VMX in Midwest. It's a few hundred bucks. There's like 20 tracks and 2 to 5 of them. Like there's shelter behavior. There's animal, like vet clinic behavior. But also I do think it's important because I'm sure we all do for trainers and behavior consultants to also be aware of some other things. Like some of the things may be not appropriate, of course, but it might, like if you work in shelter animal welfare, an update on FIP is very important. Absolutely. And those types of things are also happening. So that, yeah, that's probably, I know we recommended a few, not one each, but we know all of you want to learn more, right? So thank you guys so much for being here. I fucking love you so much. The way I end it is, what is something that currently makes you happy? It could be that your best friend Tabitha just got her VTS, or or you guys, it's exciting. Okay. It was fucking hard. I'm allowed to gloat just a little bit.
No, please do.
It was really fucking hard. And in general practice, y'all. Anyways, what is something that currently makes you happy? I'll have Jess start.
Books.
Oh yeah. That's like, she has a hobby outside of work.
So it's so healthy. I do. Yeah. I read fiction, you know, every night probably, or during the day.
What are you reading right now? I think you told me.
But I am reading The Book of Lost Names by Kristen Harmel, I believe is her last name. Really good book. It's a historical fiction. So yeah, I read a lot, not textbooks. I'm tired of reading.
I understand.
That's generally what makes me happy. And because it's winter, you know, you turn the fire on, you have the cute dog and a book and coffee, and it's a good time.
The life.
Yeah.
How about you, Kristen?
Right now, because the holidays are coming up, I'm really in deep with all of my sappy rom-com Hallmarky holiday movies.
Yes. Oh my God, we have to text each other. So it's really funny because I always joke. I'm like, I know it's fucking horrible, but you guys, I fucking love those horrible Hallmark movies. I know I shouldn't.
I think they're so predictable.
Oh my God, we have to start a group text.
You just are like, I just watched. More.
Have you watched The Noelle Diary?
Yes.
Oh no.
I did.
So good. No. I thought it was great. Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I have to find the name of this movie before we end.
And the guy who's like the hot guy that is playing in it?
Justin Hartley?
That? Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Oh my God, what's the name of this movie?
It's on Netflix.
I'm trying to, it was so good, you guys. I just saw it on Amazon Prime 2022. I need to tell people what it's called because all of you need to go watch it. Now I can't remember. Christmas or Mine. Oh my God, okay. Please watch it.
All right.
I'll
do that
it's
tonight.
It's like so good. Okay. You're going to fucking love it. So yeah, now we need to start a WhatsApp group for that because I thought my poor husband, but he deals like, we're mixing some Christmas horror into that too.
Oh, I don't want that.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No, I don't want horror. Like I'll read a thriller, but I don't want to watch it on TV.
Oh, see, I can't read a thriller. That's funny. That's like, because I love true crime and I don't read true crime books. I'm like, thriller. It's too much. Ah, oh, geez. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. I'm sure we'll have you back. Let us know what topics you would like to see my amazing behavior friends talk about next, including marketing behavior services. We need to just do a webinar on that because I wish I had that 10 years ago. But
like,
anyway.
Like we all have marketing degrees.
Dude, this is practical in real life. We're doing it in real life.
Like if you need something named, I'm your girl.
I rely on other people to help me with the marketing because I'm like, I don't know. You tell me. I am not business oriented. I'd give things away for free if I could. Like, I'm not great.
Oh, yeah. We all have problems.
Yeah.
With
that, I still do that. Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
So many great tips in that episode. And I love how all three of our paths have been similar, but also really different. So hopefully all you amazing behavior nerds out there got some tips with that episode. And of course you want to learn more. And me and Jessica actually have a cooperative care virtual event coming up on February 4th and 5th. Calm, confident, and in control, training for cooperative veterinary visits. You can find the link to register and more information in the show notes.